You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 2 hours. And I have with me from Hutchison Legal, it's our legal segment, the first hour. I have Jason and Paul. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, Alan.
Thank you for having us.
No worries. Just before we do get started, I must mention that we are doing a radiothon this week. We are looking for subscribers. Now, it's less than 40 cents a week. It's about $20 a year to be a subscriber to this station. A, it helps keep us on air, but also we, when we go to various bodies looking for a bit of money, support, they often ask us how many people we've got. So it would be great there. We're more than happy. If I really want to get some in this first hour, show these guys how many people are listening to them.
You've already been putting the hard word on us.
And they're going to try and get us some too. But also, you can either subscribe to this show or to a general show or just generally to the station or any other. So please please join up in the next hour and we'll have a readout. Having said that, guys, when we had, I think the boss was in last week and someone else, we were asking about this insurance because a lot of insurance companies now are saying that you'll lose your no-claim bonus and that if you can't give the name and address of the person that was driving the other car.
Correct.
In quite a number of these, there've been stolen cars and the person shoots through. And other cases there have been where people have just hit a car and gone off and not left their name and address. So where legally does the person who's got this damaged car, and I made that, or the person that asked me this question said his car was worth $6,000. He was still able to get around in it, but it was written off, couldn't do it up. And he couldn't get much money back.
Yeah, it's a horrible feeling, and it can be as simple as you come back from the grocery store and there's a trolley that's been pushed down the side of your vehicle.
True.
Not fun at all. It's a horrible position to be in. Unfortunately, there's not a lot that can be done. We've got a few tips for you, but they're not incredibly hopeful ones.
So the insurance company does have the right, do they?
Yeah, they do. But let's start on a positive note and say, yep. If they do provide you with the details, then you're all good. Just make a regular insurance claim. Your repairs will be covered as long as you have comprehensive insurance, of course.
The unfortunate, if it's a stolen car, they don't normally hang around.
They're not going to swap license details.
One can hope. One can hope.
Yeah, if it's the case that it's a stolen car or the person hits you and just runs and or never gives you their details, then you are very limited in what you can do. If you're able to get some details of the vehicle, you might have some options.
Well, depending on the circumstances, you could obtain it from CCTV. Now, I think that's with police help. Or nowadays they do have dash cams available to be fitted in your car, whether or not the car is actually turned on.
I know under the Privacy Act the police won't tell you much at all, but are they happy to supply you or show you the CCTV?
It depends on the circumstances. So if it's, say, in a shopping centre car park, the centre might have footage that they might be willing to give you. If they're not willing to give it to you, you can ask the police to get involved because it is a criminal offence to leave the scene of an accident without exchanging details. So the police should be interested in pursuing the driver of the other car if they haven't made those details available. In real terms, sometimes it depends on the station that you go to, the police officer involved. Sometimes they're able to commit more resources to the investigation than in others. So it's only limited help sometimes. But that's your best first port of call.
Is it?
Another option is, yes, if you've got the dash cam footage, and they're inexpensive these days to fit in your car, and some of them will automatically start recording if there's any impact, so you might be able to catch some footage of the car that hit into you.
And they tell me some of these dash cams, I don't know how it does it, but will start recording 8 seconds before the incident.
Yeah, I think they're on a continual loop. So they've got the previous 8 seconds and that just keeps going continually. So and they are inexpensive. You can get them online or get someone to fit them for you. So they can be a good option.
I think it's about $1,000 at maximum for something to be fitted, something with high quality video.
You can get them to show the front and the back. And all kinds of
Some have it on the sides as well.
Yeah. So if you've got a valuable car, that might be an investment to consider.
I don't think mine's worth that much.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I should mention too that if you've got any questions legal, we can't talk about a case because a solicitor needs to sit down with you for a long, long while and discuss a case. But if you've got any questions of law, you can either ring us now on 59615991, 59615991. Greg's out in the office and I'm sure he's happy to take the questions. Or you can Facebook us on Yarra Valley FM, or you can send us an email to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. That's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. You need to do it fairly quickly because they're only here for an hour and the hour goes very, very quickly. So they'd love to be here. Don't be shy to get in touch because these guys know it all, or if they don't, I'll soon find out.
We'd love to explore those topics.
Now, we discussed at the last get-together, about the sheriff. Somebody rang up and wanted to know what powers the sheriff had, what he could take, what he couldn't take. And I think one of the questions that were answered that if your car was due to be repossessed and did nothing about it, can he come onto your property if you're not there and just take that car away with a tow truck? Or does you have to be there? Has he trespassed or has he got... What sort of... how would you go?
Yeah. Now, it's probably worth clarifying, Alan, that when we talk about the sheriff, you're not looking for a guy with big boots, a brass star and a big cowboy hat. that is the common understanding of sheriff. They don't usually look like that.
He drives around with a car that's got sheriff everywhere. You can't miss it.
Sheriffs basically are enforcement officers of the court. Yep. And it's their job to give effect to orders when the court has said that an asset has to be collected and sold, taken possession of, then it's their job to do it. So
what can they take possession of? And B, let's talk about a car being on the... let's do the car two ways. The car could be out on the street on a main thoroughfare, or the car could be in your drive.
Yeah. So there are a couple of ways that the sheriff might have the right and the authority to get possession of assets. One would be if there's just been a general order. So say someone's been made bankrupt, then the sheriff would be able to get certain assets, and the sheriff will have the job of trying to figure out what assets are available. There are certain rules, certain value of assets.
Because you can't take a bed and things like that.
That's right. Generally, a vehicle up to a certain value is that they can't take just for bankruptcy and so forth. So that's one scenario, and one set of rules applies there. Another scenario is if, say, the car finance company is getting the car repossessed, in which case those rules are slightly different.
Let's go open this up. So the finance company goes to the courts and says these people are 6 months behind in their payment.
Yeah.
The court makes an order and says you can seize it.
Yes.
So then they go to the sheriff.
Yep.
So now, can he take it if it's out the front, or can he take it in the, or what are the rules applying there?
Yeah. So if the sheriff has an order that says he can take that car, he can get it anywhere he can find it. Sometimes you'll see that it's been temporarily clamped.
Yep.
Often that'll be if it's just outstanding fines or something like that. Yep. But if the sheriff can find it, they can take it. They've got an order and they've got the power of the court to do that.
Even if you're not at home and it's on your property?
That's correct. It's no longer your car, in effect. The court has said someone else should have possession of it. And if you haven't paid your bills, too bad.
The sheriff might make a list of items that he may want to sell. If it's communicated that the vehicle is the main motor transport, then... the sheriff may not take it, as well as if the car is under 7,600, the sheriff won't take it.
And what though?
No.
Oh, right. In a bankruptcy situation, yes.
What about in just in a, where it's just being repossessed?
If it's being repossessed, they'll take it.
And they can come onto your property and take whatever.
And generally, the rule of thumb is that if there's an order in place, you already know what's going on. It's not often that you reach that point where it catches you by surprise. And so generally the best advice is to assist the sheriff and cooperate as much as you can, because the more you try to be clever and avoid them, the more that they run up costs, the greater the amount you end up paying. If you've keyed the vehicle and ripped out the transmission to try to devalue the vehicle, it doesn't help you at all. It just runs up the expenses, and the amount of money you might get back at the end of the day only goes down.
And I guess one of the major things, and I think I made this point last week, that if you know you're getting into financial trouble, your best bet is to go to the finance company, the bank, whoever, because they don't really want the car back. They don't want...
No.
They would rather you pay it off over 6 or 7 years rather, and they get their money rather than take a loan. Just one other point that you just mentioned, which is relevant too. I saw a car the other day that was clamped, and we understand that. They haven't paid their bills. I go past, so... Has the sheriff taken control of that car, or has he just stopped it from going? And the reason why I ask, I went by 2 days later and some clowns knocked off some of the other three wheels that he didn't clamp. Now, I'm betting it wasn't the owner. So who's responsible? Because...
It's not the sheriff's responsibility in the sense that, you know, if damage happened in an impound yard, that the sheriff might have some responsibility.
Right.
Often it'll be that the car is unregistered, so it has no right to be driving on the roads.
Yep.
And so the sheriff has prevented that from occurring. You've left the car there in a public space. It's your problem.
It's your problem. So when you come back, I guess in all these cases, what you just said, it's always better. I mean, can the... If the sheriff's got an order, because you owe money, whatever it might be, can you deal with the sheriff? Can you do a payoff, or is it gone too far by the time the sheriff gets it?
Yeah, the sheriff has very limited options, and basically they are to sell the assets or get paid. And so once it's in the hands of the sheriff, it really is almost too late. And so that's why, as you mentioned earlier, communicating early is just... such a good idea.
Yeah.
I never cease to be amazed, actually, the flexibility sometimes provided by banks and finance companies if you'll communicate with them.
Yep.
And if you say, I'm in financial hardship, I've lost my job, so-and-so's sick, can I have a payment plan? And you demonstrate some good faith and upfront communication. The banks really prefer it if you come to them. If they don't have to spend the time and resources chasing you, then they're much happier to talk.
And I think it's probably got better since the Royal Commission on the Banking. Prior to that, they weren't true.
There's no doubt.
We'll just take a quick break. Again, I just would mention this radiothon. Please subscribe to the station. I'll have a look in a minute, and I'd love to read out some names of people who've subscribed in the last few minutes. I don't want to be the one who doesn't get any subscribers. So come on, please, let's get into it.
Everyone sign up now.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and... we've got the boys from Hutchinson Legal here, Jason and Paul, and we're going to talk about the Royal Commission into Aged Care. There's been some pretty horrific stuff come up, so tell us a bit about it, boys.
Yeah, anyone who's been following it in the news, Alan, will have heard some of the horrible stories which have been coming to light, and it's been stories like these over the last little while which have prompted the need and called for the Royal Commission. So one of the first things that the Morrison government did was to announce this Royal Commission, and it's been in full swing. And last month, at the end of the month, the Royal Commission released its initial interim report. And so it's about halfway through the process. The final report won't be available till next year, late next year. But in the meantime, the Royal Commission has already brought to light some pretty horrific things. And given the timeliness of it, we thought it's a good thing to chat about, just so that people are aware of some of the things that are going on.
And unfortunately, we could all wind up down there too, down the track.
That's the reality. There's a lot to be said about a society by the way it treats its older folk.
Absolutely.
And this report... The title of the report is one word, which is unusual. That kind of brevity is unusual in bureaucratic circles.
I'd agree with that.
A single word as the title of the report, and that word is neglect.
True.
That's what they've called it. The preamble is very damning. Often, royal commissions are pretty dry sort of things. It's a very passionate introduction to the interim report. Identifying that in many cases our older members of our communities are being let down and not being cared for and are being actively neglected in the way that they've been treated. So these are serious concerns. A lot of people have responded to this Royal Commission. There've been almost 7,000 submissions. And there've been 4,500 telephone calls to the information line, so a lot of interest in this commission, and we've heard all kinds of stories ranging from extreme treatment where people have, you know, not been showered and not been cared for.
One was in kerosene, weren't they?
That's right. To even more innocuous things that demonstrate a lack of care, where, you know, the patient might be provided a cup of coffee, but it's 12 inches too far and the patient can't reach and get it. Just things that demonstrate that we're not really looking after people the way they should be looked after. Some significant concerns.
So we're hoping at the end of this that governments at all levels take it on, aren't we?
Well, that's right. And so the interim report has some things that need to be looked at for urgent attention.
One of them is the further provision of home care packages. Now, the bare minimum that the Commonwealth Home Support Program provides is basic domestic assistance with goods, technology, home maintenance, meals, food services, nursing, personal care, and limited transport. However, it is likely as people get older that they would require more aid around the home than those basic needs. And an issue that a lot of people ran into was that there was a chance that they wouldn't have the same carer twice, or that different carers, providers would turn up on different days.
Yeah, that's so a point, isn't it? Yeah.
It would be an uncomfortable situation where you needed help with toileting and just had a complete stranger help you out.
I was talking to a client just yesterday, and Dad has gotten used to the same carer, and that carer's on holidays, and he won't have any other carer come in. And so these are issues that need to be treated sensitively and delicately. It's not easy.
Yeah. And that comes down to training at the end of the day, and I guess availability of services. The second issue that the Royal Commission outlined was that there's controversial chemical restraints used in aged care.
Yes, I've heard about that,
Now, under legislation, they do allow chemical restraints. However, it should always be used as a last resort, never as a first resort. Mm. And the report did outline that there was a lack of training in how to deal with behavioural changes and such, as most of the workers aren't psychologists. They can't diagnose these issues, so they normally just go for that last resort and use chemical restraints at the first opportunity.
That can, you know, that's the situation where you've got someone who's a bit of a handful for the staff, and they have a chat with the doctor, what the Royal Commission's found, there are situations where drugs are being prescribed that may not be the best treatment for the individual. And it ends up that the individual is drugged sky high and sits in a chair all day. And that's obviously not providing quality of life. That's not respecting the dignity of those individuals. And it's challenging for staff, obviously. And it's important to note when we talk about these situations, they're obviously that the Commission has identified some grave concerns. But for the most part, most nursing homes, most carers are doing the right thing by their clients.
But like everything else, there's always a few that aren't, isn't it?
That's right. And so how do we as a system ensure that these psychotropic drugs and medications are only being used where really necessary? There needs to be some stronger frameworks around
that. And the other issue too that I heard of the other day was that some person, because he was bit difficult to deal with. They kept tying to the bed.
Yeah. Physical restraints are also have been highlighted in the commission, and very disturbing kind of things to see.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I should mention they'll be back in, I think it's the 11th of December. So if you've got any, between now and then, any legal questions, either go to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au or give us a ring here. Greg's here, he'll take them down, or Facebook us and ask us any questions about legal. Now, we're just going to, Jason, you're going to tell us a bit more about the Royal Commission.
That's right. So we're talking about some of the key urgent matters that have been raised by the Royal Commission in its interim report entitled Neglect. And the first it's flagged is the need for further provision for home care packages. The second we were just talking about was a review of psychotropic medications and their use in restraining patients in aged care. And the third area that was flagged as being an urgent one was just the prevalence of young people with disabilities being admitted into aged care homes.
That's terrible.
And anyone who's visited an aged care home will know that's really not the ideal place for a young person who's got some form of disability. And so the call is for the government to provide some support around other alternatives for young people with disabilities who need care, but probably in a better, in a different setting. Yep. So all of this is ongoing. Anyone who's got further submissions can continue to do so. So any listeners who want to submit something to the commission, you've got until April 2020. So it's ongoing. But as we reflect on it at this point in the process, and as we say, a lot of roads still to be travelled. But at this point, the easy response is to look to the government, I think, and say, well, it's the government's job, they should fix it. And I would agree and probably disagree at the same time. The commission has definitely raised some issues that need to be addressed, and some of the audits clearly haven't worked the way they're intended. Some of the regulation has failed in being effective. But there's a limit to what governments can do. Governments are good at giving money, and governments can make laws, but governments aren't really well suited to provide care.
No.
That's not really a government kind of thing. And in as much as the Royal Commission is about the government's failings, it's also about the community's failings. And so I think there's a sense in which each of us individually needs to take some ownership of this as a problem. We as a society have let down some of our older folks.
When my mother was in the home, they used in a home that she passed on now, we used to leave, I think it was $100 or something, so that if they wanted to buy her something special or if they wanted to take her on an outing and the bus would all cost her. But they tell me at some of those, when those people would ring up, some of the family and say, oh, look, your mum or dad can go out in this outing, it's going to cost $10. It's, I don't know why you just don't put them down. True story.
That's horrific.
Having said that, we've got a question for Lorna. Lorna's rung in about terms of payment. So
yes, Lorna, thanks for calling in. Lorna's question is about whether a business that she's dealing with can refuse a payment method, i.e. are they allowed to refuse to accept a cheque? And I imagine, Lorna, you're not the first person to deal with this problem. Cheques seem to be going the way of the dodo and the dinosaur in many circles. Not a lot of people still using them. Lorna, I don't believe there's any obligation on a business to accept a cheque.
But it's not only a cheque too, it could also be a credit card.
That's right, that's right. Many businesses don't accept credit cards. And in fact, there's been some talk of legislation to prevent the use of cash even in transactions over $10,000. That hasn't happened yet. It might. But Lorna,
what's $10,000? Who's got that?
Correct. I think that's an attempt to deal with some of the more cash-in-hand industries. But Lorna, if someone's in business, as long as they're making clear disclosure and communicating their expectations, there's no obligation on them to agree to accept payment by way of a cheque.
Thanks, Lorna. I'm sorry, this might not be the answer you wanted, but hey, that's what we're there for, to tell the honest truth.
Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and we've got the our legal eagles with us. Right, so we've had a question, fairly complex sort of question.
I'm nervous already, Colin.
The person doesn't want to know, as opposed to suing people, right? So it's not a moral question, it's a legal question, but not from the point of who can sue.
Right.
We've heard, unfortunately, occasionally a hospital mixes a baby up. Right. Often down the track, somebody thinks this baby's not mine.
Yes.
And there have been various people who have found out later in life when they did a DNA test and all that sort of stuff. So what this person wants to know, what are the legal rights if a young mother, will say the child's only two or three, so they're not into the old age group where they can make their own decisions, and a mother has a feeling she's got the wrong baby. What's her legal rights? Not suing, trying to find out whether she's got the right baby. So that's the first thing. What are her legal rights?
Yes.
The second thing, if for some reason she has a suspicion it's a somebody else, or even she goes to hospital and the hospital says, oh, I don't know where, but somehow she gets a name of the other person that could have what she suspects is her baby, what are their legal rights? Do they have to take any part in a DNA test, or can they just say, look, I'm sorry, we're happy where we are? And then there's obviously, well, I was going to say the baby's rights, but the babies probably don't have a lot of rights, do they? Because we'll say they're two or three, so yeah. It's maybe the parents' rights. So we want to know, not from whether who can sue anyone, nothing of the like, not what morally should be done, it's purely and simply what the law says. So we've got two sets of people. You've got one person who says, I think I've got the wrong baby, I want to prove it.
Yep.
Then you've got another person who says, well, I'm happy with the baby I've got. What are their legal rights? Do they have to submit to a DNA test, or can they say no?
Yes.
And then, again, if it does happen to be that they're the two separate babies, what's the legal standing? Morally, maybe they should swap them back. I don't know. But legally, there must be a definition that says no or yes.
What a fascinating question. I would say, Alan, that anyone who wants to know the answer to that one will have to come back next month.
Yep.
And we'll do our best not to turn it into a American-style mid-afternoon Jerry Springer episode.
We don't want to do that. And I believe Grant will be back, and he's probably thinking, oh, why am I going next
month? I will happily defer to him on this one.
But there is so many issues in that.
Absolutely.
And you could legally take it out further and say, well, who can sue who? That's not what the question's about. The person doesn't want to know what the legal legality of suing it. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got purely and simply who's got what rights legally.
You could almost say you'd need the wisdom of Solomon to answer that. We'll see how Grant does next month.
I reckon you'll have staff working on that from now till next month. Guys, look, it's been terrific to have you in again.
It's always a great
segment. Again, they will be back on, the 11th, didn't we?
The 11th.
So, again, if you've got any general questions, something like this, it can be as complex and we'll really throw it at them, or it can be something quite easy, we're happy to take it. info@yarravalleyfm.org.au or give us a ring on 59-615-991 or on our Facebook page, and we'll get them to answer it next month. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alan.